Hello, I'm Christine, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 18th of June, 2025. Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition. Reading for you this week, we have myself, Christine, Ian, Angela, Liz, Helen, Mohammed, Mina, Simon and Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Mohammed. From reports to research and events to competitions, we have some fascinating news and information from the Black Country. And you'll have to be sharp of mind as well, as we have another challenging quiz from Roger and Mina. We have the first episode of a special sports feature, rewinding back to the magical moments of 1990, where, in the space of just over 5 years, a local footballing hero was catapulted from the non-league pitches of the Midlands and a career-threatening knee injury to representing his country at the greatest show on earth, a FIFA World Cup and Italia 90. And it sure has been much sunnier, brighter and warmer this week. How long will it last? We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week. June is also a busy time in the garden, whether it is planting up tomatoes, checking for early potatoes, sowing new seeds, or keeping on top of spring flowers that are now past their best. So, to help us out, we hear from our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine, who share with us some hints and top tips for the garden in June. Local news to start, though, with me, Christine, Liz, Ian and Angela.
Last month, the Association of Optometrists, AOP, highlighted the need for an urgent review of the process for certifying vision impairment, CVI, in England, calling on the government to extend the power to certify sight loss to optometrists. The move followed the results of a survey by the AOP of 1,000 optometrists, which found that more than half had frequently seen patients who were eligible for a CVI but did not have one. Of optometrists surveyed, 86% support the move to allow optometrists to certify vision loss in England. On the release of the survey results, Adam Sampson, chief executive of the AOP, said, "The requirement that only an ophthalmologist is entitled to certify sight loss denies people who are newly diagnosed of the very services they need to support them during the first critical months when they are struggling to come to terms with their condition." And a joint statement from NHS Wales, Shared Services Partnership and Optometry Wales also confirmed that as from Wednesday the 11th of June, optometrists in Wales were able to certify vision impairment for all types of eye conditions in adults. The move marked a first across the UK and is expected to improve support for people with sight loss as well as easing pressure on hospital eye departments. Optometrists in Wales will now be able to assess and certify vision impairment in optometry practices and in patients' homes. Previously, only ophthalmologists could certify all vision impairment. As from May 2023, optometrists with relevant qualifications could issue a Certificate of Vision Impairment, CVI, for patients with bilateral atrophic age-related macular degeneration in Wales. The joint statement emphasised that the new approach follows NICE guidelines, ensuring patients with vision loss are supported in a timely and efficient way. The expanded service will be supported by additional training for optometrists and close collaboration with local authorities, the statement highlighted. Children and patients who are receiving treatments to improve their vision will still be assessed in hospitals. Judy Misra, CEO of Optometry Wales, said, "This is a big step forward for patients in Wales. By allowing optometrists to handle more certification, we can reduce delays and free up hospital resources for patients with more complex needs. The change has resulted from a collaboration between Welsh Government, NHS Wales, optometrists and ophthalmologists, along with support from the voluntary sector who represented the voice of patients." Rebecca John, National Clinical Lead for Wales General Ophthalmic Services, said, "We're proud of the optometry profession in Wales. This is another example of how they are leading the way in primary care, thinking outside the box and showing their importance to the modern NHS. Owen Williams, Wales Council for the Blind Director, commented, "More patients with sight loss can now be issued a certificate of vision impairment on the high street or in the comfort of their own homes. It's all about getting patients connected more quickly to additional support in the community. Support could include accessing a self-help group, emotional support, fitness and well-being opportunities, or help to stay in employment." Williams added, "There are many ways a patient can be helped beyond medical interventions, and we see the optometrist as a key figure in the process of socially prescribing and referring to other organisations, as well as providing access to additional support, welfare benefits, financial concessions, and the service in social care." Commenting on the move, Adam Sampson, Chief Executive of the AOP, said, "The announcement that optometrists in Wales will be able to certify vision impairment for all types of eye conditions in adults shows what we are arguing for is possible. It is critical that in England a review is undertaken urgently to ensure that people are not stranded without essential support."
The AOP has also welcomed solutions that could save the NHS over £1 billion over the next decade that have been outlined in a report by the Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB, calling the report a timely reminder that the government needs to act on eye health. The six solutions outlined by the RNIB's report include providing all primary eye care providers with an NHS email address, would improve communication with secondary care and could save £20 million annually, the charity said. The RNIB's second suggestion is to ensure that all primary eye care providers have access to advice and guidance from secondary care. This would reduce unnecessary referrals, the charity emphasised. Streamlining referrals by creating single points of access would save the NHS £171 million, RNIB said, whilst fully embedding the charity's eye care support pathway would see an annual saving of £3.99 million. If the skill set of optometrists currently working in primary care in England was fully utilised, the NHS savings could be as high as £77.2 million, RNIB said. Up to £80.7 million could be saved if planning for do not attend or missed appointments was incorporated into planning guidance, depending on the chosen approach, the charity added. Aside from saving money, the recommendations would lower the number of unnecessary referrals, cut waiting times for eye care, and ensure better support for anyone undergoing a potentially devastating sight loss diagnosis, RNIB said. Patient outcomes would be improved, and pressure on hospitals and GPs' surgeries would also be reduced, RNIB believes. The findings were published in the report The Value of Vision, Six Interventions to Improve Eye Care, and are fully costed and underpinned by existing examples of best practice from across the UK. Matt Stringer, Chief Executive of the RNIB, emphasised that eye care has one of the biggest waiting lists of any speciality in England. Those waiting for eye care currently make up around 8% of the entire NHS waiting list, Stringer noted. He said, "Our report is aimed at supporting the NHS costed proposals that would at once alleviate cost and pressures in the system and put patients first. We believe these simple solutions would help the NHS to tackle financial and operational pressures and, at a very human level, reduce the substantial number of people being referred to hospital with a concern they have a serious eye condition, when a local optician could rule this out instead." The RNIB is urging the Department of Health and Social Care, NHS England and Integrated Care Boards to adopt these interventions as part of a roadmap to make eye health fit for the future, Stringer said. The recommendations come ahead of the publication of the government's 10-year health plan, which is expected to be released in the coming weeks.
And as part of the government's 10-year healthcare plan, browsing and signing up to clinical trials will also become a new feature on the NHS app. Eventually, the app will automatically match patients with studies based on their own interests and health data and send push notifications with relevant new trials, the Department for Health and Social Care, DHSC, said. The NIHR, National Institute for Health and Care Research, Be Part of Research service on the app is part of the government's 10-year health plan. It takes around 100 days to set up a trial in Spain, but approximately 250 days in the NHS, DHSC said. The department projected the plan will see commercial trial setup times fall to 150 by March 2026. Which it described as the most ambitious reduction in trial setup times in British history. Health Secretary Wes Streeting said, "The 10-year plan for health will marry the genius of our country's leading scientific minds with the care and compassion of our health service to put NHS patients at the front of the queue for new cutting-edge treatments. The NHS app will become the digital front door to the NHS, and enable all of us citizens to play our part in developing the medicines of the future." He added, "The British people showed they were willing to be part of finding the vaccine for COVID, so why not do it again to cure cancer and dementia? By slashing through red tape and making it easier for patients to take part, reforms in our 10-year plan will grow our life sciences sector, generate new funds for the NHS to reinvest in frontline care and benefit patients through better medicines. The number of trials sponsored by commercial and non-commercial entities at specific NHS trusts, as well as organisations including universities, will be made public. This will reveal which are performing well and which are falling behind," DHSC added. "Funding for NHS trusts will be prioritised for those who perform the best," DHSC said.
The app announcement comes as the NIHR launches a UK-wide clinical trials recruitment drive. Studies are too slow to set up in the UK because of unnecessary bureaucracy and duplication of activities across different agencies and sites, DHSC said. Researchers have currently agreed separate contracts with each relevant area of the NHS, but the government has pledged to introduce a national standardised contract. Professor Lucy Chappell, Chief Scientific Advisor at DHSC and Chief Executive of the NIHR, said, "Ensuring all sites are consistently meeting the 150-day or less setup time will bring us to the starting line, but together we aim to go further, faster, to ensure the UK is a global destination for clinical research to improve the health and wealth of the nation. The global clinical trials market is estimated to be worth at least $80 billion, around £59 billion, by 2030, said Professor Andrew Morris, president of the Academy of Medical Sciences, which is a fellowship of leading scientists. Those who are underrepresented, including young Black and South Asian people, are particularly encouraged to register for trials, DHSC said. Professor Morris added that the app will accelerate the translation of cutting-edge treatments from laboratory to bedside, and that making research accessible to all communities can help ensure that medical innovation benefits reach every corner of society. The focus on improving participation from underrepresented communities is important, though success will depend on earning trust and addressing the broader barriers to diverse participation, he said. Dr. Richard Oakley, Associate Director of Research and Innovation at Alzheimer's Society, welcomed the initiative and said it could really increase the number and diversity of people taking part in critically important dementia research. With a growing pipeline of drugs for Alzheimer's disease currently in trials, it's vital programs like this streamline recruitment so we can ensure these emerging treatments work for everyone, he added.
Now then, talking about access to clinical trials and being part of research, we have a news release from the UK-based charity, the Macular Society, with an article from last week titled Volunteers Needed to Try a New Drug for Late-Stage Dry AMD, Age-Related Macular Degeneration. A company developing a new treatment for late-stage dry age-related macular degeneration, AMD, is looking for volunteers in the UK to take part in a new trial. The trial, known as Archer 2, is testing a drug called ANX007, developed by US company Annexon Bio. Professor Paolo Stanger, who is leading the study, described the drug as the most exciting candidate drug for dry AMD that he's ever seen. This is the final phase of the study, Phase 3, which will be recruiting until the end of August 2025. Participants will undergo monthly eye injections for 2 years at hospitals across the UK. The trial will compare the drug against a placebo, with 2 out of 3 patients receiving the active drug. The company is looking for as many patients to sign up to the Archer 2 trial as soon as possible. The new drug. Professor Stanger compared the new drug to previous drugs which have been trialled for use in dry AMD patients. He said, "This is a drug that works on the complement system in the eye. This is a set of proteins which form part of the body's natural defences by regulating inflammation. The complement system is a necessary part of the body's natural defence against infection. However, in AMD, this system can become overactive and create a cycle of inflammation leading to cell damage." Professor Stanger said the ANX007 was different from the other two drugs because it helped protect vision. It does this by keeping the connections between nerve cells safe and works by blocking a protein called C1q. This means it stops the problem early, while the other drugs try to fix it later in the process. He added, "Unlike other GA therapies, ANX007 has been proven to stop further damage to the macula and preserve the level of vision that trial participants have at their entry into the trial. Therefore, early participation is encouraged." Where is the trial taking place? The following 5 UK hospitals are already recruiting patients: the Retina Clinic London, lead site, Sunderland Eye Infirmary, Gloucestershire Royal Hospital, Moorfields Eye Hospital, King's College London. Additional NHS sites will be added soon. All travel and subsistence expenses for the patient and one companion will be reimbursed. Participants may withdraw at any time. Professor Stanger said, "I have been closely involved in major studies of new therapies for dry AMD for many years, and this is the most exciting candidate drug for dry AMD that I have ever seen. Nothing else has been proven to show significant vision preservation." Who can join the trial? To be considered for inclusion in the study, participants must be aged 50 or over, diagnosed with late-stage dry AMD, geographic atrophy in one or both eyes. Participants must not have geographic atrophy due to other causes that are not AMD in either eye, choroidal neovascularization, CNV, due to wet AMD, or any other cause in the study eye, myopia of minus 8.00 diopters or higher in the study eye, uncontrolled glaucoma in the study eye, history of cataract surgery less than 3 months prior to the first injection, any previous treatment for AMD in the study eye other than oral vitamin and mineral supplements. Want to find out more? To find out more, you can contact the Macular Society on 0300 3030 111. To join the study at the lead site, the Retina Clinic London, email clinical trials coordinators at theretinaclinicLondon.com. If you're interested in attending any of the other UK sites, please email i.trialuk@gmail.com.
Up next, we hear from Helen, who of course has for us the Beacon update.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from Beacon back with your regular update. And first this week, we want to tell you all about a fundraiser that's coming up at our Block Switch shop on June the 24th. Yep, so you can join us for coffee and cake from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's the perfect chance to catch up with friends and support a great cause. And while you're there, you may as well have a browse and treat yourself to a bargain. Yep, so you can take part in everything, including guess the weight of the cake. I love one of them. So head along to the shop. That's June the 24th. A hot drink and a slice of cake will be just £1.50. Right, next this week, thanks for saying hello. We want to say a huge thank you to everyone who stopped by to our Say Hello bench in Sedgley recently. It was wonderful to see so many friendly faces and share more about what Beacon does. Judy and her fantastic crochet blankets truly enjoyed chatting with everyone who came by. We hope that you learned about our services, tried out our talking new CD, and experienced our sight loss simulation specs. It was a great opportunity to connect with the community and discuss how we can all tackle loneliness together, one hello at a time. Now, also recently, Susan, our incredible Bilston volunteer, has taken a big leap for Beacon. Yep, she did a 15,000 foot skydive recently, all in aid of our charity. So, wow, every donation gives Susan that extra push to jump a bit further. And, well, it helps us continue to make a real difference for those living with sight loss. If you'd like to give her some support, you can head to the website Just Giving and look for /campaign/skydive4Beacon. Well, last this week, ready, set, run 150. Whether you're a marathon pro or prefer a gentle jog or even a stroll in the park, our Run 150 challenge is your chance to get active, have fun, and raise vital funds for Beacon. So, how'd you do it? Well, step one, choose your challenge. Sign up for an official event via our Run for Charity page. You can choose your own running challenge or event, or even go virtual and complete your run or walk your way in your own time. Step two, fundraise for Beacon. Pledge to raise £150 and we'll send you a toolkit and help set up your Just Giving page. Step three, get your race pack. Raise funds and you'll receive a shiny Beacon 150 medal and a commemorative certificate. And, well, as a special bonus, if you raise over £150, you'll bag a branded t-shirt. So, what are you waiting for? Get moving, make memories, and support local people living with sight loss in our 150th year. To find out more, head to our website, www.beaconvision.org. That's it for this week. I will be back again soon with another update. Bye-bye.
Thanks for that update, Helen. Next up, we have another block of local news.
This week is the start of Cervical Screening Awareness Week, and people who have received an invitation for cervical screening are being encouraged to book their appointment now. The NHS cervical screening programme saves thousands of lives every year by checking for high-risk human papillomavirus HPV, a group of viruses that can cause nearly all cervical cancers. Cervical cancer may not cause notable symptoms in its early stages, but as the disease progresses, common symptoms include unusual vaginal bleeding, like after sex, between periods, or after menopause, changes in vaginal discharge, and pelvic pain. Advanced cervical cancer may also cause symptoms like back pain, leg swelling, or problems with urination or bowel movements. Screening is recommended for women aged 25 to 64, with invitations typically sent every 3 years for those aged 25 to 49, and every 5 years for those aged 50 to 64. Councillor Obaida Ahmed, the City of Wolverhampton Council's Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, said, "Around 850 women die from cervical cancer each year, with incidence rates highest in women aged 30 to 34. But research shows that the HPV vaccine, combined with cervical screening, can bring that number right down." Encouraging more eligible people to receive their free HPV vaccine and attending screening remains a key priority for us. Cervical cancer is treatable and curable, especially if diagnosed early. Many people survive cervical cancer if diagnosed at the earliest stage, so early detection really does save lives. If you've received your invitation, call your GP practice to book as soon as possible. Evening and weekend appointments may be available. And if you've missed your last cervical screening, call your GP now, as it's not too late. Cervical Screening Awareness Week runs from Thursday the 19th of June to Tuesday the 24th of June. The Council and the NHS in the Black Country are holding a cancer awareness drop-in session at Bilston Market this Thursday the 19th of June from 9:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. People can get information and advice about cancer signs, symptoms and screenings, as well as how to enjoy a healthier lifestyle.
And medical specialists will also be available in the region to speak about issues such as the menopause, sexual health and mental health at a free event next month. The two-hour session is due to take place at the Penn Manor Medical Practice, an NHS GP surgery in Wolverhampton, from 10 a.m. on 5th of July. GP Shavalila Baliwad will lead the event, which organisers said was aimed at women aged from 18 to 70 and no booking was needed. Experts are due to speak at the session and those who attend will be able to ask them questions. So many women suffer in silence with issues that impact their quality of life, Ms. Baliwad from the Royal Wolverhampton NHS Trust said. This event is about breaking those barriers, offering expert insights, and ensuring every woman knows that support is available.
This week also gave families in Hales Owen an opportunity to experience the new Hales Owen Spoke, which is part of the local family hub network. The Spoke is located inside Hales Owen Leisure Centre and will operate as an outreach resource for families with children who live in the area. The informal drop-in event gave residents the chance to learn more about the resource, see the leisure centre-based space and meet the team. Families also found out about the sorts of activities that will be on offer at the Spoke, as sessions at the event included stay and play, storytelling, infant feeding advice and oral health information. Dudley's Family Hub network includes 5 local family hubs, along with online resources and community services, which support children and families across the borough. The local family hubs are located at Briley Hill, Coseley, Dudley, Lye and Stourbridge. The network is a one-stop shop offering advice and support for families in Dudley with children aged 0 to 19 or 25 if the child has special educational needs and or disabilities. Families can also access key Start for Life services covering the period from conception to age 2, such as midwifery, health visiting, and early years support. Councillor Wayne Little, Cabinet Member for Children and Young People, said, "The Hales Owen Spoke is essentially an outreach facility from our nearest family hub, based in neighbouring Lye. We know it's difficult for some families to travel, and we hope this will give people who live in Hales Owen easier access to services offered across the family hub network, such as midwifery and health visiting. I hope local families will come down to the leisure centre space and learn more about the services and support that they can access through the team. For more information about local family hubs, visit www.dudley.gov.uk and search Family Hubs."
Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition. Take it away, Roger.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, it's Roger with a quiz, which I hope you're going to enjoy. We'll call this one Tricky 10. A Tricky 10. Brains in gear, off we go. In the very famous film Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart asked the pianist to play a certain song again. He didn't actually say the words "played again, Sam," but you get the gist. He actually asked for this particular tune to be played again. Question 2, geography. Where is Fingal's Cave? Fingal's Cave. Famously written about, or given that name, by a German, Felix Mendelssohn. Don't be misled by where he's from. Question 3 for the history buffs. What was the name of Wellington's horse at the Battle of Waterloo? The Battle of Waterloo. The Duke of Wellington rode a horse named after a certain European city. Question 4. What is fratricide? Fratricide. Question 5. In the southern United States, mansions are often referred to as being antebellum. Antebellum, gone with the wind, etc. What's the meaning of antebellum? That was question 5. Question 6. Who was the UK Prime Minister after Margaret Thatcher? Who followed Margaret Thatcher into 10 Downing Street? Question 7. Music mixed with heritage here. Who was the English monkey? Hey, hey, we're the monkeys. People say we monkey around, etc. But one of the four was English. What was his name? Question 8. Often described as the most successful and biggest evacuation in history, when was the Dunkirk evacuation? When was the Dunkirk evacuation? Question 9. Who wrote the famous play A Streetcar Named Desire? A Streetcar Named Desire. And still in the United States, in which state is Nashville? Nashville, the country music capital. I'll be back later with the answers.
TNS Soundings.
Cheers for those questions, Roger. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
City of Wolverhampton Council vehicles such as bin lorries and gritters could be moved to a new home under plans to demolish an industrial site. The City Council has submitted a planning application for the redevelopment of its Hickman Avenue site to accommodate a new fleet services depot. If approved, demolition of existing light industrial units not fit for purpose could start in winter 2025-26, with construction works beginning in early 2026. The scheme is designed to accommodate the council's fleet services operation, which is due to relocate from its current Culwell Street depot in the city centre to pave the way for hundreds of new homes as part of the Brewer's Yard Regeneration Master Plan. The new Hickman Avenue depot would also become home to the council's taxi licensing facility, which would move from the former Loxdale Primary School site earmarked for housing development, travel unit and street lighting and cleaning stores. Early enabling works at Hickman Avenue saw unused ancillary buildings demolished, ground investigations carried out, and two mine shafts remediated. The relocation of fleet services and redevelopment works will lead to the creation of hundreds of construction jobs at the sites of the Colwell Street Depot and former Loxdale Primary School, enable the reduction of the council's carbon footprint, and support its programme to deliver a fleet of electric vehicles. Councillor Bhupinder Gakhal, City of Wolverhampton Council Cabinet Member for Resident Services, said, "This planning application puts forward proposals for a new purpose-built depot that will enable the relocation of important council services to a more suitable base. It is also a critical step in bringing forward the regeneration of a strategically important brownfield site through the Brewer's Yard scheme to deliver huge benefits in terms of jobs, investment and homes that will help rejuvenate our city centre. The Hickman Avenue redevelopment will ultimately ensure the sustainability of essential frontline services by consolidating, rationalising and optimising our operations. It will lead to reduced energy costs and asset maintenance and support the transition of the council's combustion engine fleet to EV. Separate planning approval is already in place to demolish existing buildings at the Colwell Street depot site and remediate the brownfield land to make it ready for the development of hundreds of new homes as part of the Brewer's Yard scheme in the coming years. Once all the land is unlocked for housing, the completed scheme will see a mixture of houses and apartments, a new retail and commercial space. The development will also sit just a few hundred metres from the city's new transport interchange, providing quick, direct access to Birmingham, London and Manchester.
And across the region to council vehicles in Dudley, where a competition has been launched, giving children the chance to name the council's new waste trucks, with the chance to win a £300 prize for their school. Entries must be in by Friday the 30th of June. Winners will be selected by a panel led by the Mayor of Dudley. The new fleet of trucks is coming in as part of Dudley Council's new household waste service set to launch next year. It will see separate collections for garden waste, recycling, general waste and food waste. Councillor Peter Lee, Mayor of Dudley, said, "We're asking children to come up with fun, creative names for our new waste service trucks. We'll be picking over 40 winning names, and each one will be featured on the front of a real truck driving around the borough. All the winners will get a certificate of achievement and a photo of their named truck out on the roads. In addition, the top three will win £300 for their schools and a special visit from myself and the Mayoress to present them with their prize. You can give your truck any name you like. All we need is a short sentence alongside it explaining why you chose that name. I look forward to seeing all the entries." The new waste strategy will see a weekly food waste collection introduced and changes to the current refuse and recycling collections. The competition will close at 5 p.m. on Friday, June the 20th. All entries can be hand-delivered to reception, the Council House, Priory Road, Dudley, DY1 1HF for the attention of Claire Waldron, or can be scanned and emailed to capa.admin@dudley.gov.uk.
Now, whilst on the topic of waste products, a little warning that this food for thought may put you off your Boston victual. As UK doctors are attempting to flush out dangerous superbug infections using poo pills containing freeze-dried faeces. The stool samples come from healthy donors and are packed with good bacteria. Early data suggests superbugs can be flushed out of the dark, murky depths of the bowel and replaced with a mix of healthy gut bacteria. It is a new approach to tackling infections that resist antibiotics, which are thought to kill a million people each year. The focus is on the bowels, which are the biggest reservoir of antibiotic resistance in humans, says Dr. Blair Merrick, who has been testing the pills at Guy's and St. Thomas's hospitals. Drug-resistant superbugs can escape their intestinal home and cause trouble elsewhere in the body, such as urinary tract or bloodstream infections. So there's a lot of interest in, can you get rid of them from the gut, says Dr. Merrick. The idea of poo pills isn't as far-fetched as it might seem. Fecal transplants, also known as trans-poo-tion, are already approved external for treating severe diarrhea caused by Colostrum difficile bacteria. But scientists noticed hints that fecal transplants for C. difficile also seem to get rid of superbugs. New research has focused on patients who had an infection caused by drug-resistant bacteria in the past 6 months. They were given pills made from feces, which people had donated to a stool bank. Each stool sample is tested to ensure it does not contain any harmful bugs. Undigested food is removed, then it is freeze-dried into a powder. This is stored inside a pill that can pass through the stomach unscathed and reach the intestines, where it is dissolved to release its poopy, powdery payload.
The trial has taken place on 41 patients at Guy's and St. Thomas's hospitals in London to lay the groundwork for a large-scale study. It showed patients were up for taking a poo pill and the donor bacteria were still being detected in the bowels at least a month later. Dr. Merrick says there are really promising signals that poo pills could help tackle the rising scourge of superbugs and that donor bacteria could be going to microbial war with the superbugs as they compete over food and space on the lining of the gut, and either rid the body of them completely or reduce them down to a level that doesn't cause problems. The study also suggested the array of gut bacteria becomes more varied after the therapy. This is a sign of good health and may well be promoting colonization resistance, so it is harder for new infectious bugs to get in. It's very exciting. There's a real shift from 20 years ago, where all bacteria and viruses were assumed to do you harm, to now where we realise they are completely necessary to our overall health, says Dr. Merrick. Earlier this week, scientists showed the good bacteria our bodies meet in the hours after we are born seem to halve the risk of young children being admitted to hospital with lung infections. Our body's own human cells are outnumbered by the bacteria, fungi and others that live inside us, known as the microbiome. This has led to research implicating the microbiome in everything from Crohn's disease to cancer to mental health. If poo pills are proven to work against superbugs in larger studies, then the researchers think they could be used for both treatment and prevention in people at risk. Medical procedures that suppress the immune system, including cancer therapies and organ transplants, can make the body more vulnerable. A lot of these individuals come to a lot of harm from drug-resistant organisms, Dr. Merrick said. The UK's drug regulator, the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, MHRA, said there were more than 450 microbiome medicines currently in development. Some of them will succeed, so I do think we will see them coming through quite soon, said Dr. Chrissy Sagaki, the head of microbiome research at the MHRA. We could potentially in the future replace antibiotics with microbiome therapies. That's the big picture, so there's a lot of potential. Or you could say, potential. Up next, let's have another Beacon update.
If you need help with sight loss, then filter glasses might help you. Filter glasses are a range of glasses specially for sight loss, designed to protect your eyes from harmful UV rays and reduce glare and bright light, and also improve contrast as well. They make things clearer to see and your eyes more comfortable. They can either be worn on their own or you can wear them over your existing prescription glasses. Wearing a sun hat or a baseball cap or a sun visor can also help too. So if you'd like to try the range of Cocoon filter glasses and find the right lens and frame to make life a bit more comfortable for you, then call Beacon Sight Loss Advisors for an appointment. You can call on 01902 880 111 and ask for a sight loss advisor.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. And haven't I got a treat of a forecast for you this week? I hope you're all being enjoying the widespread spells of sunshine that we have been experiencing right across the region. With the sunshine set to continue into next week, the high UV levels shall remain. So take care and continue taking the necessary precautions. The prolonged sunshine should see UV levels peak too high this week. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:45 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:35 p.m. for the sunset. As far as the weather, it is looking rather glorious for Friday 20th and weekend of 21st and 22nd of June, with unbroken sunshine from dawn right through until dusk. Temperatures shall reach a very summery high of 27 degrees with a light southerly, providing a pleasant, gentle and refreshing breeze. Moving into next week, and it's remaining just as glorious, bright and cheery, with plenty of sunshine forecast to continue right through the week from Monday 23rd to Thursday 26th. There is a chance of some light drizzle late on Thursday. However, these are not looking like they shall set in for long and likely to fizzle out rather quickly, thanks to the strong summer sunshine, which should help temperatures remain comfortably over 20 degrees. So it does look like we are set for a truly wonderful week of weather ahead, with plenty of sunshine right through the week. Please also remember, should you be experiencing any discomfort and light sensitivity from the bright sunny days, Beacon's team of sight loss advisors are available to provide advice, guidance and demonstrations of low vision aids, such as a pair of filter glasses that may help make things much more comfortable for you. You can contact the sight loss advice team on 01902 880 111, but please do also listen out for Pete in this week's edition, who'll also be providing a little bit more information about the support available. Do take care, have a wonderful week and enjoy the weather.
Thanks for that weather update, Mina. And as we've just heard, a heat wave is descending on the Black Country this week, which means hot and bothered nights. While many of us enjoy the gorgeous sunny days, the muggy evenings are a different story and not nearly as pleasant. Temperatures in the West Midlands will reach up to 30 degrees C by the weekend and may not drop much below 18 degrees C at night. That means it will be a nightmare for many trying to get to sleep. To better understand why these humid nights can severely disrupt our sleep, we spoke with sleep expert Dr. Greg Elder. He has shed some light on how humidity can impact our sleep quality and patterns, and has also shared some useful tips to help you get a better night's rest. How can we combat hot nights? Aim to keep your bedroom temperature near 19 degrees C. Keep your bedroom at as close to 19 degrees C as possible, advises Elder. Bedroom temperatures that are over 25 degrees C are bad for sleep. Electric fans can help. You can also get small fans that can plug into a USB socket that are quiet and effective. Keep the bedroom dark. Invest in some blackout curtains and blinds if you find that the evening light is creeping in and disturbing your ability to fall asleep. Keep your bedroom as cool and dark as possible and avoid sleeping anywhere else other than your bed, recommends Elder. Get up if you can't sleep. If you're lying awake for hours, get out of bed and do something calming like reading a book. Avoid staying awake in your bed if you can't sleep. Get up if you can and only go back to bed when you feel sleepy, advises Elder. Stay hydrated in the day. Drink plenty of water during the day because this will help your body to keep itself cool at night, recommends Elder. Have a cool shower. Before going to bed, a cool or lukewarm shower or foot bath can be a good way to help your body to relax and tell it that it is time for sleep, says Elder. Ditch the duvet. It seems obvious, but many people keep their thick duvet on through the summer. Ditch it for a summer version or simply go for an old-fashioned sheet on particularly hot nights. Keep a regular schedule. Try to keep your usual sleep and wake schedule. Regular sleep timing tends to be associated with better sleep quality, advises Elder.
In another timely report, residents of the region are being urged to stay safe this summer, with around 1,400 cases of melanoma skin cancer diagnosed in the region every year. The call comes as new analysis by Cancer Research UK suggests that clothing choices may influence where skin cancer develops. The latest data from 2018 to 2021 shows that across the UK, 40% of melanomas in men were diagnosed on the torso, back, chest and stomach, more than any part of the body. This translates to around 3,700 cases every year. However, in women, the most common location is the lower limbs, from the hips to the feet, with more than a third of cases diagnosed here, around 3,200 cases every year. Cancer Research UK is encouraging people in the West Midlands to take care, as around 130 men and 90 women in the region lose their lives to melanoma each year. The charity says behaviour in the sun, like what people wear or how much sunscreen they use, could be influencing where skin cancer develops on their bodies. For example, men might be tempted to go without a shirt, while women might wear shorts or skirts as the weather gets warmer. Surface area could also be playing a role, as men's torsos are typically bigger than women's, and women's legs take up a larger proportion of their body surface area. Although wearing less clothing in hot weather can help people stay cool, it also means that more skin is exposed to the sun's ultraviolet rays, which can damage the DNA in cells and cause skin cancer. In fact, 87% of melanoma cases, that's around 17,100 in the UK each year, are caused by overexposure to UV radiation, which is why it's so vital to enjoy the sun safely and avoid using sunbeds.
To help raise vital awareness, Cancer Research UK has joined forces with Nivea Sun to encourage people to protect their skin this summer, following three simple steps. Spend time in the shade, especially between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. in the UK. Cover up with clothes, a wide-brimmed hat, and UV protection sunglasses. Apply sunscreen with at least SPF 30 and 4 or 5 stars, generously and regularly. The charity spokesperson for the West Midlands, Gemma Humphreys, said skin cancer rates across the UK are set to hit a record high this year, but the good news is most cases are preventable. So as the weather gets warmer, it's really important to look after yourself in the sun. Getting sunburnt just once every couple of years can triple your risk of melanoma skin cancer compared to never being burnt. That's why we're working in partnership with Nivea Sun to remind people to seek shade, cover up, and apply sunscreen regularly. It's not just the hot sunny days you need to watch out for. In the West Midlands, UV rays can be strong enough to cause skin cancer between mid-March and mid-October, even when it's cloudy or cool. Nearly 100 years ago, Cancer Research UK helped prove that UV radiation can cause skin cancer. Since then, the charity has learnt more about how skin cancer starts and spreads, and is pioneering ways to prevent, detect, and treat the disease. Advances like this mean that today in the West Midlands Cancer Alliance area, around 9 in 10 adults, 91%, diagnosed with melanoma will survive their disease for 5 years or more. Gemma added, improvements in skin cancer survival rates highlight the remarkable progress driven by our research. But the growing number of people diagnosed with melanoma in the region and across the UK is still concerning. If you notice anything different on your skin, like a new mole, a mole that's changed in size, shape or colour, or any patch of skin that looks out of the ordinary, don't ignore it. Speak to your GP. We want to beat skin cancer for everyone, no matter who they are or where they're from. Early diagnosis is key and could make all the difference. For tips and advice, visit cruk.org/sunsafety.
Now we have the first episode of a special sports feature, rewinding back to the magical moments of 1990.
The first few bars of Nessun Dorma and the memories come flooding back. 1990. Time for Guru, or time for an Italian summer. Time for a wonderful theme tune featuring Pavarotti. Time for England's Backstreet International, the Tiptonian Wolves legend who gave the gold and black faithful a magical few weeks in the midst of an incomparable 13 years. Stephen George Bull, who, in the space of just over 5 years, was catapulted from the non-league pitches of the Midlands and a career-threatening knee injury to representing his country in a World Cup, with three lions on his shirt and the pride of the Wolf Pack in his heart. The greatest centre-forward that the world has ever seen, at the greatest show on earth. Even now, 35 years on, for the fans who lived through it, whether those who travelled to Italy to watch Bully play, or those who followed every cough and spit on television back at home, it still remains surreal. A Wolves hero from the second division, mixing it on the world stage not only with some of the country's most iconic figures, but the very best players on the planet. It is difficult to truly put into words the feeling of excitement and anticipation of a tournament that extended beyond just cheering on England. There hadn't been a Wolves player gaining minutes for England at a World Cup for 28 years, going back to Ron Flowers in 1962, and there hasn't been one since. It was truly a special time, and of course, mainly for the man himself. I come down the stairs in my house every morning and see my framed England shirt on the wall, signed by Sir Bobby Robson and the players, and my fourth placed medal, Bull revealed this week. And still I pinch myself, even now. Did I actually do that? Is that really my shirt? It is still surreal now, never mind back in the day. There was a time I thought my chance had gone, and when I had a piece of bone floating in my knee at 17, I thought I was never going to be a footballer. I needed surgery, but managed to come through and move from Albion to Wolves in the lower reaches of Division 4. And just under 4 years later, I was off with England to a World Cup. It's crazy when you think about it. In fact, the whole Steve Bull story is crazy when you think about it. A total of 306 goals for one club, hitting a half century in successive seasons. Phenomenal. Throw in the England element and it becomes even more extraordinary. Growing up in an area of Tipton christened the Lost City, Bull used to kick a ball against a wall opposite his house and dream he was playing for England. Dreams can come true. Signed by West Bromwich Albion after impressing with Tipton Town, Wolves swooped in late 1986, and the rest is history. Glorious history. His spectacular goal-scoring exploits as the Wolves' revival clicked into gear attracted the attention of England under-21 boss Dave Sexton, who gave Bull his debut as an overage player away in Albania, barely 15 months before the 1990 World Cup. The return against Albania at Portman Road 6 weeks later, watched by hundreds of Wolves fans, saw Bull notch his first international goal and England B recognition alongside strike partner Andy Mutch soon followed. Again he found the net. As the challenges grew, so did Bull's impact. Famously crowned as he came off the bench to score on his senior debut away against Scotland at Hampden Park, only weeks after still plying his trade in the third division. I couldn't believe it, he says of that moment. again watched by hundreds of Wolves fans who had journeyed north of the border to share his success. It was a brilliant first touch off my shoulder. Ron Saunders would have enjoyed it. And then I smashed the ball home and sank to my knees. So far so good, but it was poised to get even better.
Now, here come the quiz answers.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, Roger back with the answers to our Tricky 10. Our Tricky 10 quiz. In the famous film Casablanca, Humphrey Bogart asked Sharon to play it again. Which song did he want the pianist to play again? It was As Time Goes By. Now, I can't resist the temptation to say, you must remember this. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, in which location is Fingal's Cave? F-I-N-G-L-E apostrophe S. Fingal's Cave. It is on the Isle of Staffa, on the Inner Hebrides. And the tune that bears that name was written by Felix Mendelssohn. The name of the Duke of Wellington's horse at Waterloo was Copenhagen. Sometimes we Brits call it Copenhagen, but I've heard several Danish people pronounce it Copenhagen. So, you know, who's to argue with them? Oh, you. Oh, go on then. Question 4. What is fratricide? Fratricide. It is killing your brother. Oh, dear. Question 5. Southern U.S. mansions are often referred to as being antebellum. Antebellum. Well, the meaning is before the war. Ante, before, bellum, warlike. Question 6. Who was our Prime Minister after Margaret Thatcher? It was John Major. John Major. Question 7. Who was the English monkey? That was Davy Jones. Davy Jones. Question 8. The Dunkirk evacuation was in June of 1940. 1940. Question 9. The writer of A Streetcar Named Desire was Tennessee Williams. Tennessee Williams. And that's a sort of clue to the next one, which is number 10. And finally, in what state is Nashville? It is in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee. Hope you did well with those. Take care. Bye.
TNS Soundings.
Up next, let's have another block of local news.
To a historic garden centre which is closing down after passing through 5 generations of the same family. Webbs of Bearwood, which has barely changed in 104 years, opened its door in 1921 and has been serving green-fingered customers in the West Midlands for more than a century. It is believed to be Britain's oldest garden centre, having traded from the same location on a terraced street in Smethwick throughout its entire history. But current owners Pauline and Steve Webb have decided to shut up shop now they are ready to retire. The family-run firm started life as a simple shop in the Sandwell suburb selling corn, bulbs and seeds, long before gardening centres were even a concept. As well as lasting through World War II and seeing 5 monarchs take the throne, it has also survived the emergence of national garden centre chains and the growth of online shopping. The couple believe the store, which has barely altered over the years, has been able to stand the test of time by being able to adapt to gardening trends as they have changed. Gran of 2, Pauline, 70, of Bearwood, who took over the shop in the early 70s when seeds were 28p a pint, said, "We love this place, but we're just ready to retire, really. It does take over your entire life. We only live 6 doors up from the shop and the plants always need you. But we're 70 now. It has kept us fit, but we'd like to retire to Cornwall. We start at 5am in the morning and don't get back until 8pm some nights. It's 7 days a week for 9 months of the year. From Christmas to Easter, we're closed on Sundays, but the rest of the year, it's 7 days a week. It's fetching the plants to start with, unloading, and then spacing them out of full trays. We take them to the greenhouse and repot any that need repotting. Then running the shop generally and nipping to the warehouse, it all takes time. We haven't had a holiday for 15 years and we haven't left Bearwood basically. Plants need us here all the time, so we can't get away, and now we feel it's time.
June is also a busy time in the garden, whether it is planting up tomatoes, checking for early potatoes, sowing new seeds, or keeping on top of spring flowers that are now past their best. So, to help us out, we hear from our gardening experts at MK Pulse magazine, who share with us some hints and top tips for the garden in June.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, this is Jan with some seasonal tips and ideas from the gardening expert at the MK Pulse magazine. You say tomato, I say tomato. Let's just get them in the ground. Some tomato plants at school are growing outside on raised beds, tied to canes 150 centimetres tall, while others are in large pots. Three plants are in a tomato growing bag against the south-facing wall of the summer house. A second crop of these most popular of veggies, well, let's remember that a tomato is a fruit, placed in individual pots, are hardened off for a few days before being planted into deeper holes and firmed in to leave the plant in a dip so that any water runs down to the roots. Yellow-fruited varieties should be considered and can be a healthy alternative, but they do not contain the powerful antioxidant lycopene found in the red varieties, which is associated with various health benefits. There are now a few varieties, including Moonglow, Hawaiian Pineapple, and Orange Roma. Even the names sound yummy. We are going to carefully dig up a few of our early potato plants to see if the tubers are above egg-sized and worth lifting. They have the best flavour. Plant out leek seedlings on well-prepared ground with organic matter and a dressing of general fertiliser. Trim off any roots to about 5 centimetres, and that's 2 inches, and water in. Adjacent onions should be weeded carefully as they are shallow-rooted. Use an onion hoe. I'm hoping to have a sense of success with cucumbers this season, despite losing one of them in one of the surprise cold nights in April. They were potted into 5-inch pots and are growing well. They have an interesting feature for teaching, with both male and female flowers on the same plant. The male flowers must be picked off and are easy to spot, lacking the obvious fruit swelling behind the flower, which is noticeable on the female flowers. Carmen, Diva, and Mini Munch are examples of all female varieties. Now is the time, if you have the space, to sow seeds which like warm soil, either in drills in the soil or in containers to plant out soon. Draw out drills with the rake or hoe and plant seeds singly or in twos or threes, later removing the weakest seedlings. Suitable seeds include kale and white cabbage, such as January King, Maribel and Savoy, runner beans White Lady, climbing French bean Eva, courgette Tuscany and winter squash Honey Bear. Seeds of the biennials can be planted later in the month. Wallflowers, forget-me-nots, foxgloves and sweet williams will grow well after being pricked out and can be transplanted in the autumn into their spring flowering positions in borders and beds. Hanging basket compost only feeds plants for a few weeks, so the basket will need feeding when you water weekly, making sure it penetrates the compost and does not just run off the foliage. How is your garden doing? My lawn is recovering from no-mow May, and the daisies, buttercups and primroses have taken enthusiastically to the new management programme. Mowing frequently with gradually reduced settings of the mower blades will increase the density of the turf and improve its resistance to dry weather. The whole appearance of the garden will be improved if you trim the edges, either with a flat spade, a half-moon edging iron, or long-handled edging shears. The grass roots must be stopped from encroaching into the border. The primulas look so beautiful in April sunshine, but have become bulky plants and can now be dug up, divided and replanted along the edges of borders. I have a long high hedge of box and numerous topiary box balls. Last year's fright about box blight still concerns me. A fungicidal spray did the trick, while box moth caterpillars, if suspected, can be prevented or treated by specific nematodes. This is preferable to a general insecticide spray, which will kill all insects, including those which, in a balanced ecosystem, are preyed on by birds or are garden-friendly, such as ladybird larvae. Feeding the box bushes also helps it to withstand attack. On the south side of my greenhouse is a large deciduous Acer flamingo tree, now in full leaf, which gives shade through the summer, negating the need to apply white shading paint to the glass to help lower the temperature. Your greenhouse should have the door and windows open every morning to help air circulation. Wet the floor too, as it will cool the air as it evaporates. And during these longer days, spend some time in the shade yourself, enjoying your preferred drink.
TNF Soundings.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!